are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad it's Friday. Been a busy week.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it's Friday. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Do you get to relax?
Do some relaxing. I've been on this purging binge. I guess I was going to say a binging. I don't know. Like cleaning stuff out. So like today I did the the hall closet that's like, you know, supposed to be for like your coats and stuff and ours. And then we had like hooks where we like hooked our coats, and like there were sweatshirts and various layers and different kinds of things. And so I just went through it all and got rid of the stuff that we don't use anymore.
And it's a good feeling.
Yeah. So just one thing at a time, I'm like, you know, the process. So yeah, good feeling going into the weekend. Girlfriend of mine's having a little get together tomorrow night, so that will be fun. It's like her little delayed New Year's party, you know, because everybody's got everything going on like the weeks surrounding Christmas and New Year's. So she's like, no, I'm just gonna wait, I'm gonna hold it off, and
nice,
we'll do it a little bit later. So yeah, I'm under orders to bring Pictionary, so it's gonna be one of those kinds of nights.
Yeah. Very fun.
Yeah. And then we have football. So we have football on Sunday. The Bills are playing the Patriots. So while we're talking about this, let me update the world in case anybody cares. Damar Hamlin, Buffalo Bill, plays cornerback. He plays safety. He was playing Monday Night Football against the Bengals in Cincinnati. Took a guy down, had a hit, and then he got back up right away after the hit, but then like immediately fell down again. And what had happened, and people didn't know what was going on for a long time. And of course, you know, we're diehard Buffalo Bills fans here. Husband is a lifelong fan, you know, and everything. And then with this happened, of course, you know, now everybody's like a Buffalo Bills fan, which is just like, I feel like the world needs this.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Like something to feel good about. And what brought everybody together was the the fact nobody knew what had happened. Like it was rumored that it was a cardiac arrest, and nobody knew any information for like a day or so. We knew he'd been there was CPR on the field, and then he was taken in an ambulance to University of Cincinnati Hospital, which is a phenomenal hospital. We have heard in the days since that he is fine now. Well, I mean, he's not fine now, but he's awake. He's alive. They've taken him off the, he was intubated, the tube down his throat to help him breathe. He's been off that. His heart was restarted on the field, which is just like terrifying. It was like, as soon as he went down, like, and then you started hearing that, you started seeing the players' faces, and it was like, something about this is different. And then, so the whole world kind of united, especially the whole sports world kind of united around this, like prayers for Hamlin. And it was a feel good thing. I mean, not that that's the reason we want to feel good, but then we got all this great news about him getting off the ventilator and getting off, you know, and being able to talk, and he FaceTimed with the team, and he's like, all these really great updates. He's doing really well. He's doing amazingly well, neurologically intact and all this stuff. And so things are really good.
Yeah.
And just seeing the outpouring of love and support from all of the teams and everything, you know, has been, I think, what the world needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the fact that they canceled the game, postponed, or whatever. So that was great too, because, you know,
it wasn't about football.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah,
any greedy NFL or any company, a lot of times would just continue on. But I think they made the right call.
Absolutely. I mean, at first they didn't know what was going on, and there was like some rumors that they were supposed to be starting again in like 5 minutes, like the game or whatever. But the NFL has sort of said, no, we never said they were going to go back on. So I don't know what's happening, you know, with where that came from, but that was sort of the impression that was happening. And then the coaches met and were like, no, we're not going to play. So they postponed everything, but they didn't know for how long, because nobody knew anything. And everybody was like, no, we can't, you know, we just saw our brother get CPR'd back to life, right, on the field. Like that you can't just go play football after that. And And they didn't. They ended up, and they're not going to reschedule that game. They're just canceling it. And then there's, I don't know, NFL's going to do something with the machinations because it was the last regular season game before the playoffs, and it was going to determine seeding and all this other stuff. But I guess they'll figure something else out because
yeah,
it said it's bigger than football. And I know for those of you guys who aren't, you know, sports fans or anything like that, like it really was. It really was. Not about sports. It wasn't about football. It was about everybody going, oh shit, this is wrong. Something's wrong. Yeah. And they don't know what caused it yet. They're still investigating all that. We don't have a ton of that, but he is speaking and communicating, and they say he's neurologically intact. Not only are the lights on, but somebody's home. So, yeah. And they credit that to the assistant trainers on the, or the, all the trainers on the field, but specifically this one guy who had given the CPR, mm-hmm. brought him as quickly as they did it and brought him back so quickly. And they used the AED, the automatic external defibrillator, yeah. and got his heart started again. And the docs, the hospital credit that for his standing now. So
yeah, AEDs are so critical to have. I mean, you see them in the mall, the airports, obviously it's idiot proof. Mm-hmm. You literally mm-hmm. open it up and it tells you, where to put it, what to do. It talks to you.
Uh-huh.
Step back, you know, and it tracks for a pulse too. So obviously it's not going to shock you if it knows that you have a pulse. Yeah. But I think it's really critical that we have AEDs in place in different locations, right. easily and accessible.
On that same note, I wish they would start putting more Narcan in places like that.
Yeah. But
I understand the reason why. For those who don't know, Narcan is the drug, is the brand name of the drug, Naloxone, that brings you back to life after an opiate overdose. So
yeah, which is a major crisis in the United States,
right? And just, and so many people don't call for medics because, you know, they're taking heroin,
right.
They're doing illegal drugs, so they don't want to get caught with it. But I think in having them, it's a whole thing. I could mm-hmm. do an entire show on that, but who knows? Maybe we will one day.
Yeah, you can invite my brother on. You know, he's the drug expert.
Yeah, yep. We're definitely going to do stuff about sobriety and addiction and recovery and some of those things that surround that, maybe some jail stuff. I was just talking to my sponsee the other day. She was telling me this story about how she had escaped from jail, from prison, actually, in Florida.
And she's not in jail now?
No. And she's been sober for a while. This is all well before she got sober. This is many, many, many years ago. But it was like they're on like some work thing where they take them out and they to the like the side of the road and they fix ditches and shit like that.
Uh-huh.
And it was through that process, a series of events that happened, and she ended up taking off and running. And she's telling me the whole story, and I am just, oh my God. And I'm like, you need to tell the story again. I asked her if she'd be willing to tell it in public. Like, uh-huh. meaning, you know, would she come on the show? I said, I don't know what format yet. I don't know under what topic or whatever, but I feel like you need to tell the story. I'm dying laughing.
Did she get very far?
She was gone for a while. Yeah. Like months.
Oh, for months?
For months.
Oh my God.
So it was outside Jacksonville.
Wow.
The P Farm, for those of you guys who don't, who know jails in yeah, she escaped from, and I don't even know what year it was. I'm gonna need to ask her, but it was fucking hilarious. So I asked her if she'd come on and be willing to talk some stories. Maybe we can do some jail episodes. I don't know what's happening. This new year, new me, all of those kinds of things makes my brain is just like, well, overloaded.
It's a full moon today too, so yeah. Oh. I'm all kinds of out of whack. I feel a little charged though. I do. And I was like,
charged?
I walked like charged, like energized. I went outside and I was walking the dog and I look up and then I see the moon. I was like, oh, it's bright. I'm like, it's a full moon. So I Googled it. Yep. It's a full moon.
It's a full moon. Okay. Well, yeah. I'll put my crystals out to charge. Did you give Kaya? Oh, you don't even have crystals.
No.
That's right. Kaya, Jesus. Okay. No, you and Kaya need to come over here. And we're going to my crystal store and we're going to hang out and we'll record an episode over here.
Yeah.
I'm going to play Barbies with Kaya and we're going to talk to the ghosts in my house and it's going to be a whole thing.
Just come
over. Just come over. Come over. I have to be in the office next week, one day. But other than that,
I'm down.
Okay.
I'm down.
We'll talk. We'll figure and bring your needles.
Because yes.
Yes. I need some muscle tension relief.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, we are going to do Unsolved Mysteries tonight. And yes, we are doing episode. This is volume 3, episode
6.
Called What Happened to Josh? Lexi, take it away.
Yeah, so this episode was very interesting, and I tried to do a little bit more research / Reddit / every other search just to see like what the overall, you know, what overall people were saying.
What else is out there kind of generally?
Of course, because there wasn't very much information. So we have the student, Josh Gemo. He is a St. John's University student.
Minnesota, right?
Yes.
Minnesota.
Yep. Who went to a party, like a poker party with only like 10 or 12 people, left the party and was never seen again. That's the gist of the episode. So we are going to like start out by, the episode starts out with just his friends talking with his mom, going through yearbooks, kind of going over like who he was as a person. He was a very intelligent student. He graduated high school in 2000 and was valedictorian. And his goals were to become a lawyer and then eventually the president of the United States. So he had very high goals. Everyone said how intelligent he was. And then what happens is they kind of like show this girl, Katie, as well, who Katie was his ex-girlfriend from high school, who went to the sister school of St. John's, which was St. Benedict. I guess it's like two schools.
They're both religious colleges, and they're near each other. Like the St. John's was all male and St. Benedict's was all female. And they had different campuses, but they were very close together.
Yeah, and then they had a class together too. So they shared some classes together. So she went to the same area as him for college, I guess you could say, right next door. They continued their relationship in college, but then that eventually ended. And then he disappeared a month later. What was very interesting to me was that they also interview his roommate from college, whose name is Nick. Now, Nick was saying that on November 9th, 2002, they went to a brunch and then they got an invitation to a party at Katie's house. She was having people over, and Nick said that he went to Katie's house, but his roommate Josh went to the poker party.
Right. Well, Josh and Katie, well, not Josh, the other guy, Nick. Nick and Katie at this time were they were really good friends and they were contemplating hooking up.
Like, right. They said that they kissed like once or twice.
Right. They were considering maybe they were going to take their relationship to the next step. They ultimately never did. But at this time, they were kind of exploring that. So that might explain why Nick went back with Katie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not so that I think that has any relevance to the story, because they brought up, is Nick possibly a suspect? But I don't.
Well, there was a lot of people on Reddit that were saying that they thought there was some sort of love triangle going on, and that maybe even with Nick and Josh, but that's a whole nother story for later. But they were, I don't believe that either.
I don't believe those.
I feel like Katie would have said something by now. It's been 20 years. And I
think
there
would have been, I think there would have been more stuff to indicate that, like more stuff out of the ordinary with Katie and or Nick. And I don't think there was anything out of the ordinary with either of them.
I
think what was much more out of the ordinary was the fact that this alleged fake ID business that they didn't talk about on the show.
Well, and then, so yeah, I guess we should get to that later. So they went their separate ways, and Nick came home from Katie's house, woke up at 2 a.m., noticed that Josh was not home, but he didn't think anything of it, yada, yada. He did say that he looked at his computer and saw that Nick was idle on AOL Instant Messenger, if you're old enough to remember what that is.
We're talking back in the day, you guys.
Right. We're talking about the MySpace era. Maybe right before the MySpace era, actually. Around
AOL IM, where right you would set really cryptic song lyrics to your away message.
Yeah, you'd have usernames, you'd away messages. People made a certain noise when you came online. Mm-hmm. So he said that his computer showed that Nick or that Josh was idle for about 12 hours. So then on Sunday morning, he's still not home. And it's now November 10th. His friends have not seen him. And his mom was notified because the school called her mm-hmm. and said, hey, you know, your friends, Josh's friends are worried about him. He's been missing. So at that point, she knew that something was seriously wrong because she feels like her son would have contacted someone and that was out of his character. Mm-hmm. So what they did then was they sent an officer, the sheriff's office, over to his apartment to just do kind of a walkthrough. It wasn't a like in-depth search, but they just mm-hmm. were walking through to make sure everything was in order. Nothing looked like it was destroyed, or as they said, there were no suicide notes or anything left behind, and everything looked like it was in place, except for they found eyeglasses and a contact case that they figured if somebody was to leave for a long period of time, that they would need their contact lenses.
Right. If they like he had planned to disappear, step away or whatever.
Right. And what they didn't mention in the episode two, which I read later, was that his car, I don't think they mentioned it, that his car was found on campus still. I'm not sure if they mentioned that. I can't remember.
I don't remember. I'm getting that the story confused with the Idaho murder story, which everything we're going to update in another episode because it's all college students and stuff. So I'm getting confused about, was it a white Hyundai Elantra? No.
No. We're getting like inundated with like information from every which way.
Yeah. And we're going to do an update episode on that as well. So you guys get to hear everything that's been out there. Anyway, go ahead.
So much stuff.
So the car is found.
Yeah. The police also said that Josh's key card was used on November 9th at approximately like 11 p.m. And that was the last time it was used. So a lot of people think like, well, maybe Nick had something to do with it. And they had a fight or yada, yada. But at the end of the day, his card was used at 11 p.m. And then he left to go back to the party and he never came back.
Right.
As his key card showed. Now, what's interesting is when he got to the poker party, it was between 11:30 and 12. He didn't really stay long. They said that he didn't know everyone there. So they didn't say how many people he knew or whatnot, but it seems like it was just like a melting pot of different people from wherever. Mm-hmm. And that he didn't really stay very long, but there's debate whether or not he was intoxicated.
Yeah. Some people said that he had drank a lot. Some people said he hadn't been. He was just fun and his normal, good, fun, jolly self.
Right. And it was the police, too, that I believe were the ones that said, well, he was probably intoxicated. But we're talking about, a college student.
Yeah, when he goes to Bible college. I mean, religious college. So,
they probably party harder than anyone else.
You know, I'm not making any assumptions because I don't know.
please don't send us hate mail when I make that comment.
I don't know.
We're talking about a college kid, period, at a Saturday night out. So who knows? And his mom was saying that she thought it was weird and unusual that no one saw him leave or no one communicated with him that he left. And I'm thinking, lady, we're in college. Everyone's drunk or playing.
Nobody cares.
Nobody's paying attention. So I don't think that's a red flag. I don't think that's anything weird. And then, of course, after he left, there were sightings of him on a bridge. So he definitely left by himself, mm-hmm. at least at the beginning. And then the cops decided to send tracking dogs out.
Right. The bloodhounds.
Yes. Which they located a scent like around the water under the bridge.
Yeah. I guess they tracked it from. So they showed the aerial of like the map, right? Where they were, like how there was like the dorm mm-hmm. and then there was this river and then there would have been the apartments. And you couldn't go a direct, like as the crow flies between them, you had to go up to the bridge, down and back in. So like as the crow flies, they would be right across. I mean, I'm making all these arm movements like you could see me on a podcast. Right. but like, so there's a river separating these two locations, his dorm mm-hmm. room and the apartment where he was seen. And to get to between the two, you have to walk up to this road, cross this bridge that goes over the river and down back. So, and like, you're doubling back in a way. Yeah. So I guess he was spotted on that bridge, which, you know, he would have had to have walked. And I guess the dogs tracked his scent from that apartment where the party was to the bridge, basically the same spot that he was allegedly spotted.
And then a couple was, they were walking down the bridge and they noticed him walking. He had a gray hoodie on, blue jeans. They didn't see any cars near him. They didn't see anybody else with him. So that was the only sighting of him, what they believed to be him, on the bridge. Now, fast forward, it's November 11th. Josh has been missing for 36 hours. And at this point, the police decide to call in the National Guard. So they have a full-on search on campus. Students are helping. Everyone's out, you know, tackling in the woods. They said that there are different elements to the land. I mean, you had like this, like the like river. You had just different kinds of like mountains, land, woods,
terrain and stuff. Yeah, and then it's this really small campus because it's like the college itself. It's like they said, like 2,000 people. It's not a big place, but the land that it's on is huge.
Yeah.
So there was, so they were searching all of it basically. And that was, oh, and then you can talk about the church with the pedophiles, but which I think was completely just thrown in there for red herring, but entertainment purposes. But okay.
Yeah. That and the fact that there were other males missing within 100-mile radius.
Yeah.
Of this location as well.
So let's talk about that first.
So two other males went missing. They were later located. Both were found in bodies of water. And they weren't sure if it was like well, this was like 2003 when they found the other two bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people were thinking, is it a serial killer? These are all young males, the college student age, or, you know, what was the connection? Later on, the police were saying that there was no
connection. Probably wasn't a connection. And I guess one of the friends was saying that the other person who had gone missing at the same time, the fact that they happened right around the same time, she said confused people. And I'm not exactly sure what she meant because they didn't really follow that up a little bit. But I think, I mean, my guess would be that, you know, people, just like I got confused right now about the details of this case versus the Idaho murders case, right? Like people may have gotten details mixed up that they're hearing and thinking one, you know, oh, this piece of evidence that was actually attributed to this one, not that, you know, I don't know. That's my guess.
Right. And maybe it took away from both, you know, parties like, or all the cases, because you're now dividing your attention among different areas. I don't know how, you know, the campus is small with 2,000 people, but I don't know how big, is it a rural area that they're around?
It's Minnesota. I mean, what's in Minnesota?
I don't know. There's like cold and stuff.
Cold.
Right. So actually, speaking of cold, so they had a dive team go in, they searched the water.
Oh, and they had to wait till the water was not winter because they had to wait for the ice to melt.
Oh, so then they were saying, we're going to postpone the search and wait until the spring. And the theory behind that was the body creates gases. Once the body defrosts, the gases will then start to be released and then the body will float. So theoretically, if there was a body in the water, then it would float come springtime.
Once the ice in the water was melted.
And at this point, they interviewed Nick and they said that Nick was like, oh, the school like already asked me if I wanted a new roommate. And he was like, no.
No.
Because, you know,
it was weird. He wasn't ready for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Katie was upset because
she's like, I don't know how I finished that semester.
Right. So then it brings us to them talking about the monks and the sexual abuse allegations
on this monastery that's on campus.
Yeah. So they said that there was
just randomly thrown in.
And here's the thing. They said that there was a possibility that Josh was researching the history, I guess, of the monks sexually abusing students. And no one could find that on his computer. They did a lot of searches for papers, but there was no evidence to support that he was going to do some sort of investigation into the allegations of the monks. So
I think this was just for sensationalism because they say later when they're talking, they're like, do, 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 do. They're like, do, 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 do. And the news guy, and there's 12 known pedophiles living right behind. I mean, like, that's just sensationalism, right? Like,
and I agree.
On Reddit, one of the posters was like, yeah, I went to school there 6 years after Josh went missing. And it's like a real thing. Check out this behindthepinecurtain.com.
I saw that link, but I hadn't clicked on it yet.
I did.
What did you learn?
I'm going to have like a whole rabbit hole to go
down. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, there's videos. There's all kinds of links. The victims, meet the monks, reading list, articles and documents. Like, it's a ton of stuff. So apparently that's a real thing. But it doesn't seem related to Josh's missingness.
Mm. Yeah.
So
rabbit holes can.
Yeah. But they bring that up as a possibility. And I was like, I thought it was going somewhere cool and it wasn't. So.
Right. And then it's like, what would be the motive? Okay. So he's potentially thinking about doing research. Like, that doesn't seem like a motive to me. I mean, he hadn't come out and said, hey, everyone, I'm doing research on, you know,
the abuse. And doing research versus like trying to out you, like, that doesn't, yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's just seems like there's no connection there.
So that was one of the theories floating around.
There's no nexus, as it were.
Yeah. Some people were saying that it had to have been, he had to have the result. Hold on. Okay. Sorry, TJ, let me do it again. Another theory was that someone who knew him did something to him. Maybe it was one of his roommates. Then maybe it was Nick. People were looking at Nick. And let's talk about Nick, because as we've learned, you're a lawyer. What are your thoughts on lie detector tests? Nick refused to take one. He agreed.
I'm of the same mindset.
Yeah.
I would say no also, because they're not permissible in court for a reason.
Exactly.
There's all this. Oh, well, you know, if you don't take it, you know, are there adverse inferences taken because you didn't take it? And the cop on the show seemed to indicate, yes, they're going to, like, it's going to make them stop and think. Yeah. But also, you know what else is going to make them stop and think? If I lawyer up right away and don't talk to the cops, which is 100% will do. And I recommend every single one of you guys do not talk to cops ever. I mean, not a
lawyer,
not ever. But I mean, if they're saying, hey, come in here and let's talk to you. Mm-mm. It's a big fat no. Okay. Don't. I wouldn't talk to the cops. I'd lawyer up right away. Oh, what innocent person gets a lawyer and talks to the cops? No, I know too much. I've listened to way too much true crime and unjust, wrongful conviction stuff, which, by the way, that's a fantastic podcast. Wrongful Convictions with Jason Flom. Amazing. Not an ad. Not an ad. I just love it. But, you know, there's far too many instances of, you know, oh, the cops, don't believe them. They're lying. They are allowed to lie to you, all that stuff. And I'm not giving this as legal advice. I'm giving this as a true crime podcaster. Okay.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think I've thought about this before, because I watch a lot of Dr. Phil, and there's a lot of Jack DeMarco giving lie detector tests on the Dr. Phil show. I don't think that I would either, because they are not admissible in court for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so then you could argue, well, it doesn't matter what it says, you know, if it says, you know, if it's indicates you're deceptive, well, they can't bring that up in court.
Right.
But at the same time, they can use it to like find others, you know, gives them more suspicion, more reason, and all these other things. And I mean, I've taken polygraph exams before.
I want to take one.
I've worked in law enforcement, and you have to go through extensive background checks. And I work in government. You go through extensive background checks to get your clearances, all these things. So once upon a time I had to take a polygraph, and it's based on everything that, you know, you've done in your background, and, you know, there's a very specific protocol to it. And I obviously did fine, you know, there's a very specific protocol about how they do it, and they ask control questions, and you do it once through first, that doesn't count. And then you do it again, and he asks you the same questions, and it's all like super laboratory controlled, as it were. You know, it's I'm not afraid of them per se, but I'm also don't give them.
Is it also up to interpretation by the person giving the exam? Because I don't know anything about them.
The most current technology. I don't know.
No, but I mean like the actual person interpreting it. Like, let's say you and I both give the same person a polygraph. can we both interpret it differently?
Right. This is what I'm saying is I don't know the technology because that used to be like the ones you see on the old timey crime shows with the lines, with the little metal things that go back and forth and stuff. And now they're not. It's like on all computerized and stuff. But it has to be interpreted somewhere along the line, whether it's the computer programming algorithm doing it and saying, oh, this, you know, because if it's just recording the information, that's one thing. But if it's recording and then interpreting and presenting like a spike, it will spike up here when your sweat and your, you know, pulse increase at the same time or whatever, you know, somebody.
It has to happen at least once.
It always does.
Once an episode.
When I kick out the plug on my microphone. Somebody has to program that. Mm-hmm. Some human interpretation has to program that to tell it to do this when this happens. Yeah. Or somebody, if it's just recording straight data, somebody has to interpret that data.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And, you know, I've never kept up on it. It's not something that I've studied.
Me neither.
You know, I do. I mean, I used to know about them when I was, you know, applying to different law enforcement agencies and things like that. And, you know, but that was 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
And there's the power of the mind, too. So like when I was studying psychology in undergrad, one of the classes I had to take was called biofeedback, biopsychology. I don't know. Anyways.
Right.
What the cool thing we learned is we were learning how to control our pulse by our minds and our heart rate. Or that is your pulse. I'm sorry. But you know, our breath. Right. I meant. Sorry. So we were doing different things and strategies to be able to use our minds, which we all know is, you know, we're capable of. So could a person be able to control their sweat, control their pulse, control their vitals to create it, you know?
Yeah.
To
be like on that line.
Homeostatic. Like
my, so on, I got a story like that. So my first husband was a police officer. And during the time he and I were together, he had applied to one of the police departments and needed to take a polygraph exam, I think, because he had switched police departments and stuff. So he was taking another one. He's taken them before, whatever. He's taken this polygraph exam. He took it, it registered as like unregistered. Like it didn't register properly, and not that it registered deceptive or not deceptive. It just didn't properly register. And so they were like, so they tried it again and it still came up that way. And they said, basically, I mean, like they ultimately hired him anyway, cause you know, it doesn't matter, but he had been a biathlete in high school. And in biathlon, you know, you do this crazy cross-country skiing and then you get down on your stomach or do standing up prone or whatever you're doing with the rifles, and you do shooting at targets. And with that, you have to learn to slow your breath down, slow your pulse down, slow your breathing down, because you have to go from that crazy cross-country high speed cardio to stopping all that so you could
focus
so you can shoot. Because if you're breathing heavy, your hands are shaking, moving, and your gun is moving, and then you're not going to hit your shots. So you have to be able to slow yourself down for that. So they said, because of all that, plus, you know, he's been a police officer for a billion years, like he just, you know, doesn't register on it, and that's just whatever, you know. So he wasn't lying. He wasn't not lying. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah.
Things are weird. And somebody along the way has to interpret it. And quite frankly, in a lot of instances, I just don't trust cops. I mean, I just don't. I'm not going to talk to the cops if they want to, you know, okay, but I'm going to have an attorney. Let me talk to an attorney first. And if it's a situation, you know, and then we'll decide. We'll go from there.
I agree.
Talk to me with him present or her present. Well, yeah. So anyway,
it's funny because we, as people that watch crime shows, at least me, I'll speak for myself. Mm-hmm. When I see somebody that doesn't get the police, I'm like, oh, they're definitely innocent. When I see somebody lawyer up right away, I'm like, oh, maybe they're guilty. But I mean, like, it's my subconscious. But then I have to take a step back and be like, wait a second. Maybe this person is just critically thinking about the situation. But how many of us do when it's a situation that's, you know,
Paul Holmes has said, don't talk to the cops. And he's like, I am a cop, but don't talk to them.
<cops." laughs> Hey, Fraudcasters. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be such a challenge. I know I've always had problems with it, whether it was the fit or the quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims, the maker of my perfect t-shirt bra. Now I have the perfect t-shirt to go with that bra. From either crop silhouettes to long sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. My cotton jersey t-shirt is now a wardrobe staple for me. I reach for it almost every day, and the fit is so perfect because it snatches me right in at the waist. I've washed it a million times, and it's held its shape really well. It fits like a dream. I absolutely love it. And honestly, you guys, I thought, like, okay, this shirt is going to be too small for me, and it's not going to fit right, and all the bulges are going to show. But it doesn't at all. I put it on and it magically stretches to fit me perfectly, and it holds all those bulges in. Every little but last bulge that I have is all held in, and it looks fantastic. I absolutely love it, and it is super, super comfortable, and it is one of my new favorite t-shirts. You can shop the Skims t-shirt collection at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small up to 4X. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu.
Yeah.
Paul Holtz caught the Golden State Killer. So
that's awesome. I did watch a lot on that. That was so cool.
Yeah. Paul Holtz. Oh, hot for Holtz.
I love it.
Love it. Anyway, back to
So we're gonna go back to Nick and the reasons why, you know, he
decided not to take a polygraph exam because
he said, stop wasting your time on me, go find the real killer or real person that was responsible for him leaving. Another theory was that, hey, maybe he wanted to disappear, maybe he wanted to just get away, but again, he left his glasses and people just didn't think that that was possible that were close to him.
But you know how I feel about people saying, oh, he would never do that.
Right. You don't know. You don't know.
Don't know.
And the one thing that the police said that was not consistent between Katie and Nick's story was that Nick said that he got back from the party, back to his apartment at 2:42 a.m. And that he left the party at 2:30, let's say. So it was a very short amount of time for him to get home. Katie said, no, Nick left the party at 1:30 in the morning. And the police put this all into they made it into this big thing. There was an hour that he could have done something.
Unaccounted for hour right. where he could have done let's, something.
We're talking about drunk, possibly drunk college students that did not have the cell phones that we have today that literally you hit a button and it shows the time. And you know, when you post stuff on your social media right away or whatever you're doing, it's all timeline.
We didn't have the trackable phones. They didn't do all that stuff back then. And
with the Nokia,
the only thing they had was the swipe cards for the, when they swiped into the dorms.
Right. So I take everything that they said with a grain of salt, because I don't think that that's as big of an issue as the cops are making it out to be at all.
Right. Also, an eyewitness testimony, people are going to hate this, is inherently unreliable.
That is true.
People remember the same thing, the same incident. People are going to remember it differently. There are going to be inconsistencies across that testimony. And in fact, if everybody came in and told me, oh yeah, the meeting happened at exactly 2:42 and at 2:46, the fire alarm went off. And if everybody had the exact same story, I'd be suspicious that they got together and made it up.
Because
eyewitness testimony, we know this, it's science, is inherently unreliable, and it's inherently going to be different from each other.
Yeah. Hell, nowadays you can actually see some sort of evidence. You could give somebody information and everybody views it differently, and it could be right there in front of your face. So eyewitness accounts are completely, inaccurate in some cases. So Nick was saying that he was never told he was a suspect, and Katie said, I don't think Nick had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. Then Katie goes on to say maybe it was an accident, which was another theory people were talking about. Hey, he was walking on the bridge. Maybe he slipped on and fell, hit his head, fell into the water somehow. But again, if that was the case, most likely we would have probably found his body in the water when they did the initial search before they called it off. So as far as we know, the body was not in the water. Now, after he disappeared, his father actually, within a few 2 weeks of his disappearance, went into the apartment and gathered his belongings because he said, hey, I don't know who's coming in and out of this room, and I want my son's stuff. I want to protect it. So he grabbed his computer and I guess important items that were missing. So Nick said that he did not touch anything. He did not touch the computer while he was gone. He didn't touch any of his stuff.
Okay. I don't know. All right.
Yes.
Because that may be true. Maybe he didn't. So this is the thing about the computer, right? And you're going to explain what they found on the computer, right? They are at that time in that year or whatever and stuff, and in dorm rooms, not everybody had a computer. So I know, like with mine, I had a computer, but my roommate used it. And other people talk about, like, you see it on the Reddit and stuff, and people in college at the time, you know, at that time, not everybody had a laptop, and we didn't have computers in our pockets to, like, do stuff. So we, like, I had one computer, I had, like, a Mac SE, one of these tiny little boxes, and, you know, I'd write my papers on there, and, like, that was it. That's all we did on it, you know? And then we didn't even have internet, but we got it, I think, while we were there.
Well, I graduated high school in 2003. So like summer, whatever, spring 2003. And so I started September 2003, going into 2004 for my first year of college. And in my campus, we all had our own computers. Every single person I knew in 2003, 2004 had their own computers. With that being said, I mean, I'm in, like, you know, not a suburb of DC, but we're in like more of a, I don't want to say affluent because we're not affluent, but maybe it was different near DC, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. You're a DC suburb versus like a rural, you know,
and like Sarasota's kind of out there, but
bumfuck Minnesota.
So I don't know. It's different. Yeah, maybe it's different technology. I mean, I had the internet at age 10, way before any of my friends had it. So I don't know. Maybe it's different location wise, but
I went to college in 93 was my freshman year when I lived in the dorms. Mm-hmm. And I had the computer. And I shared it with my roommate.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, early 90s. So
yeah, you never know. I mean, you know, we don't know coming out of the room. And plus, when you're in a dorm situation or an apartment, like on campus, people really are coming in and out. Like if you're having a party, people could be using your computer. I mean, you really don't know.
Right.
So what's interesting is,
well, I guess we should talk about what they found on the computer.
So in 2008, the detective decided to go back with newer technology to be able to retrieve data that we weren't not able to retrieve back in 2001. What was it? 2002.
Right.
When he went missing. So the detective noticed that there was software put on the computer that actually erased like important files and data, like browsing history, different files. Now, what's interesting is that the computer was, quote, erased like within a couple weeks of him disappearing.
Right. So this was weird. So it was sometime in the time between. No, because it was between when he was disappeared and when the father took possession of it, right? Because didn't they get it? They initially tested the computer with the technology that they had back then, and they couldn't get anything from it. It had been wiped or whatever.
Right.
And then it was later he went back, and that's when they were able to find that there was the software that had been installed like a week or two after he went missing.
Right. So they
didn't know. Wiped the computer. Yes. And the thing that they said about it too was that it was never, this had never previously been done on his computer. Therefore, this wasn't a regular, they made the conclusion this was not a regular habit of his to wipe his computer, computer washing.
Right. And my thing was too, I was like, well, at first I was thinking, is this something that you could automatically program to do every week, every couple weeks? But like you said, it was the first time that it was done. So obviously someone was trying to hide something.
Yeah.
So
because when they tested it initially, they didn't have the technology to be able to find all this stuff. When they tested it later that they saw this and they said, oh, okay. And then the technology that had been installed, at first they thought it wiped everything, but it didn't. It only wiped some stuff. And so they were able to retrieve some things.
And when I was on Reddit, I noticed a couple people comment and say, I don't think it's that weird that somebody would erase their computer. I've always told my friend, if I go missing, erase my files. So apparently guys, I don't know about women, whatever, talk about this to each other. Maybe they don't want to see.
Could have been. Could have been just somebody in the dorm was like, oh shit, maybe we, you know, or maybe somebody else was using his computer to look at things that they didn't want the police to know about.
Yeah.
Or they didn't want him, you know, to know about his porn habit, which we found out anyway.
So yeah, so his porn habits. So he was watching heterosexual more than just porn. Right. And he was watching gay porn as well. So he was watching both of them.
The whole gamut.
Yeah. And he had placed a Yahoo.
Which I don't know about you, but I kind of watch the whole gamut too.
I plead anyway. The fifth. I don't have time to watch porn. But so he was looking for casual encounters on Yahoo ads with men. Now he was pretending on two of his accounts to be a female, and on one he was an actual male. So he was communicating and chatting with men, and these men, for the most part, believed that he was a female. And they were able to recover photos of these men 20 years later, well, at the time, 2008. And now they've posted these men, which I was like, oh my God, that's crazy.
Like, do you recognize any of these men?
I was looking too. I was like, do I know any of them? I'm like, I don't know anybody from that area, but yeah, you never know. You never know.
So let's unpack this a little bit. And they mentioned his porn habit just because they had, like, I think that his chatting was, like you said, two accounts. He was pretending to be a female.
Yes.
Gwen Big Tits or whatever it was.
Gucci Coo, Gwen Girl Big Jug or something.
Yeah, Gwen Girl Big Jugs was one of them. Yes. So he had two that he was chatting with men as a woman. So these men that he was chatting with on those two accounts believe they were chatting with a woman. And then this other account where he was actually chatting as a male to other males.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So yeah. I just want to make sure that that's clear. So these pictures that they were showing, I don't think that they specified.
They did not specify
which accounts they came from. So
they did not.
They're just from all of the accounts. These are all the guys that he was talking to, allegedly. I mean, they could have been catfishing him. You know, yeah. Who knows?
Right.
But we don't know which ones. Thought they were talking to a woman,
right?
Or which ones they thought were talking to a man.
Which hopefully will make people come forward, because there won't be that embarrassment if they are closeted or if they didn't want mm-hmm. people knowing their sexuality, you know, whatever. Because they didn't specify, maybe more people will come forward and be like, oh, I do recognize Uncle John from, or whatever, you know, cousin Brian or, you know. So they posted pictures of the men, which I would suggest you go to unsolvedmysteries.com, look at the pictures, see if you know anyone, because it could help the case. They're looking for anybody that communicated with him to find out if he possibly wanted to meet up with one of these men. And that's the biggest theory that they're going with, is that he probably communicated with someone on one of these dating or, you know, Yahoo personal ads and wanted to meet up with him that night. Now, again, we don't have, our cell phones are different, right? Like back then you did not have instant emails and things like that. I don't think, I can't remember. Remember anything being instant, or, you know, was Yahoo an app on your phone where you could just.
Oh God, no apps on phones. No.
I'm trying to remember.
In 2000, what year was this?
2002. So I remember driving with MapQuest directions printed out in 2002.
Still at that time. Yeah.
So
my kid wasn't born yet, and I didn't have an iPhone to take. My kid was born in 2003, and for the first couple of years of his life, I didn't have a smartphone. I didn't get a smartphone until he was like five, and that was like a BlackBerry. And
yeah, then I had the BlackBerry at some point in college. I had,
and like he was like five or so when I got that. So in 2002, there weren't smartphones yet.
No, I had a Motorola flip phone, I believe, in like around that time. Maybe 2003. The green,
like.
Mine was silver, but yeah.
I had a big brick.
I had a Nextel too. You could only do like a few things. Oh, nostalgia.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so we don't think he could have done much with it. So we don't know. Maybe he was meeting somebody. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody stopped and wanted to chat with him and he got in a car with him. We don't know.
Right.
So two incident reports that were done on campus, which is by like some sort of group called Life Saving Services. It's just where people can report things that are suspicious. Maybe you're seeing people that are not part of the school on campus, or just whatever is awkward and uncomfortable going on campus or weird, you can report it to this group. So they saw that a car was seen in a quote hookup area of campus. So I guess it was more of like a secluded road area, pulled over. So like the security drove up to the car and they noticed a college aged male jump out of the car and run. So they were like, okay, there goes the man running out of the car. When they talked to the driver, he said that he was just dropping this person off on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you dropping a person off on campus in like the hookup area, which is not near the dorms or anything? To me, that was a little fishy.
Yeah.
So who knows what was going on? So they don't know who that person is that got out of the car, but they're trying to find out who it is. So nobody's come forward and said, hey, I was the person that got out of the car. They did speak to the driver. It was an orange Pontiac Sunfire. They got the license number and everything, but they don't have any evidence of it, you know, the driver being a person of interest as of right now or anything like that. But that car had been seen on campus.
Yeah. I feel like I didn't get a lot of information like about why all that was relevant necessarily, or like what it was going to tell them.
Yeah.
But it feels like if they don't have that, like maybe they don't have, like, that seems like their standard investigative stuff that they do. And then, yeah. I don't know. It just seemed like it was like, okay, like, it didn't lead anywhere, or did it? Yeah. Do you think it's connected? Like, what are you looking
for?
The
weird thing is, when they wanted to then later get this car for evidence, right? They wanted it had been crushed, even sold.
Crushed. But they didn't say why it had been crushed. Do we know the backstory on that? It easily could have been in an accident and then it was totaled, or maybe it was like a, you know, old car, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's any number of reasons. And the fact that they didn't specify makes me think it's probably a completely innocuous reason.
I agree.
And they didn't say that because they want to leave that, make it, you know,
dramatizing the story.
More dramatizing, yeah.
Because, you know, Unsolved Mysteries has been doing that a lot this season. I'll be honest. Uh-huh. There's been a lot of sensationalism and
versus just know. Here's the facts.
Yeah. So the owner crushed it. We don't know why, but I think we do know why. Maybe it was something very simple, as like it was totaled. Yeah. Now, Katrina just sent me a picture of all of the men.
It's from the additional evidence link on Netflix, which we will link in the show notes, which is the Netflix has the file that I was like the extra evidence. And this was shown on the show, but I'm just showing it to you now.
Now, number 12 looks like every dude I see at my metal concerts that I go to.
Oh, my God.
Like every guy in the pit. In the mosh pit. Okay.
Yeah, and number 2 looks like every guy I went to college with. Like, ooh, every guy looked like that with the puka shell necklace.
Yes. And then,
I mean, that just looks like every dude.
I somehow closed it and can't open it. This is what a boomer I am, everyone. I'm like, how do I?
Yeah. And number 22 looks like a mugshot. I don't know.
Let me see. I have to reopen this. 22. Oh, yeah. Or like a driver's license or some sort of like, it looks like a passport photo.
Perhaps.
One looks
like. We didn't have fancy webcams back in the day, but I don't know.
One looks like he shops at Pacific Sunwear or Hot Topic.
Yeah. Oh, but he's got the little patchy soul patch beard thing going on. Number 3 is every shirtless dude with a puka shell necklace, but he doesn't have the hat, just like number 2.
Yeah. Number 3 looks like every dating Tinder Bumble picture you see nowadays that hasn't changed.
Number 12 looks like a psychopath, but yeah.
That's my metalhead shows, man. Yep, he's probably cool. Shows. He's innocent.
21 looks like a teacher.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's at the bulletin board in the background.
Yeah.
Number 20 looks like he's in tech, like IT.
Yeah.
Totally. He's definitely IT.
19 looks like he is in jail.
He looks like the dude from Arrested Development. Have you ever seen that show?
I don't watch it. I did not watch it.
Well, listeners, you'll know if you look at
26
it.
26 looks like he's in a hot tub, which is kind of frightening because he also doesn't look like he has a neck.
Or a shirt on. Is that a shirt or is that
no,
a skin?
No, I don't think it's a shirt. It looks like he's in a hot tub with no shirt on.
Now, 27 and 28 look like every selfie you would take back in the day with your terrible camera.
Right.
Like they're blurry. The lighting's bad. Pixelation is bad. We have
the
no idea.
We had back then.
Yeah, 27 and 28 are definitely people they will not be able to identify.
Number 16 is like this guy's high school senior picture.
Yeah, football.
It might be a little young for you, dude.
Yeah, I think number 5 looks... Oh, I shouldn't be mean. Okay, I'm not going to say what number 5 looks like.
He's wearing a turtleneck.
He looks like American Psycho.
He does.
That's neither here nor there.
But number 7 looks like he definitely date raped somebody.
I closed it out again. Where did it go? Oh my God.
And we should move on. The
Anyways, yes. Yes, let's not judge Sorry, people guys. Based on looks. Okay, so where did I leave off now?
What do we know about this ID card business?
So people were saying it wasn't really a business. Like apparently Katie came out or someone.
This was not talked about on the show, by the way. This was
additional.
So
they found
research.
Evidence that Josh was making like identification cards, you know, to make yourself over 21.
Right.
However, as the Redditors were saying that apparently they did that too in college when the technology started coming out and you could scan things or whatever.
Somebody in my dorm did it.
Yeah.
I didn't have one, but I know somebody made them because other people got them.
I had an old ID from one of my sorority sister's older sisters whose dad was a cop in Montgomery County, Maryland. So I had her ID. I was apparently 5'11". I had to always wear heels when I went out because I'm only almost 5'7". So I'm not going to say her name on this, but no. Thank you for many years of drinking and having fun. A couple years. But yeah, so what was found was that he was just making a few IDs for his close friends. It wasn't a business, apparently. It was just something he made a few IDs for.
Right.
So I think that was... You know, when people were bringing that up as being a possibility of a motive or something related to his missing disappearance, it doesn't really make much sense. What do you think? What do you think happened?
Well, okay, so I think that I don't know. It is I think that the what was found on the computer, I think is where the key lies. Right. Yeah. I think his scent disappeared right at that bridge. Right. I think he got into a car.
Me too. Now, the question is it a car of somebody that he was chatting with or is it just a random car
right.
of a person offering to give him a ride? You know, we don't know. And as we've learned in all of the crime stuff we've been watching and paying attention to, it could have been that he just got into a random car.
Yeah.
You know. It could have been or a known friend or quote friend of somebody he knew or acquaintance.
Yeah. Who knows what's the, you know, is it like Baltimore where they pick up these rides like on the side of the road? I don't know. Do they still do that in Baltimore?
I don't go to Baltimore very often. I have no idea.
Where they
go in, I get in and I get out.
I don't go there very often either. I'm going there soon. I have a concert there with a girlfriend of mine.
Oh, nice. Who are you seeing?
Matt Nathanson.
No idea, but great. That's awesome.
I gotta look. When is it? Oh, it's February, I think. Is it February? Yes, February 19th. So yeah, he's actually coming. When the first came out, his tickets first came out, the only one available was in Baltimore, and it was a Sunday. And my girlfriend that I see all these concerts with, I see him with her all the time. She lives out closer to there. She lives out in like, I don't remember. Like north of you, but towards Baltimore, somewhere over there.
Like Glen Burnie, Pasadena,
past there.
Like north of Baltimore or south?
No,
of Baltimore?
I think I can't remember. Anyway, doesn't matter.
I don't even know where I am.
It doesn't matter. She comes to DC when we see him in DC, and then I go to Baltimore when we see him in Baltimore. And, so we got tickets to go. It was a Sunday night. My husband couldn't go anyway. Her husband couldn't go. They have a baby. So she's like, it's too hard to get a babysitter for this one. So I'll just go by myself. And I'm like, I'll just go by myself. We'll just go together. And then like the following week, he released tickets two shows in Alexandria at the Birchmere, which is where I usually, I seen him at the Birchmere the last like couple years running, right? Except for COVID, like before COVID and then after COVID. Mm-hmm. And it's a great, great venue to see him. And then, but, and so those are Friday and Saturday nights in Alexandria. And I'm like, eh, I don't need all three nights. I'm just, I'll go to the Baltimore one anyway. There but I digress. Anyway, my point about Baltimore was there are people like there, the culture there, what there, there's certain ways you can pick up rides on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's all I'm saying. I don't want to
talk about them. Okay.
Like the people, yeah. Like back when I was living there, it was like they would stand on the side of the road, and I don't know all the details, and I don't want to out too many of the details. You
it's
know,
like, well, yeah, it's like that in DC too. In certain parts, I've seen. I haven't been in DC like out in the club since.
You talking
like
about? Yeah, I don't know. But, are you talking about the slug lines in DC?
Oh no, never mind. I know. I don't know if we're talking about the same thing.
Okay, so yeah, no, we're talking about different things. So, but my point is, and this just proves my point, is that in the different areas, alternative means of getting rides exist.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, okay.
So. In Baltimore, they do one thing. DC has slug lines, which is like organized getting in cars with strangers to drive into DC on the HOV lanes.
Uh-huh.
And you're literally getting in cars with strangers, and you have signs. There's people have signs. I'm going to this area. It's very organized. It's a whole thing.
Oh, interesting. Thing. That makes sense.
The slug lines? Yeah. Oh, yeah. People slug into DC all the time. So you get people from all these outer suburbs and stuff who want to go to DC, but they all want to like share a car. So they like on these different park and rides, and then there's a whole like website stuff about it. But it's like this very, it's very organized, but it's not anything official. It's and so you stand in different places depending on where you want to go in DC. Like there's certain points that are just known points where you're, oh, I'm going to this. I'm going to this. I'm, you know, I'm going to DuPont Circle. I'm going to Franklin Circle, whatever. And you get in the car, people drive up and they need one, two, or, you know, people to make the three to be in the POV, the HOV lanes. And then you get in the car with strangers and you drive to DC. And then you also, there's, they do it in reverse.
That's awesome.
So my point is that getting around an unofficial manner is, I think it's very local, especially if you're like, you're in a small town.
Yeah.
And there's like not very many people, and you know, everybody generally knows who everybody is. You know, it might be a common thing for them to, you know, if someone's driving along that road to pick people up and take them down to the college, you know.
Well, my question is, were there no security cameras anywhere? Even back then, they had security cameras in places.
Yeah, for sure. They would have had.
Why was there no security cameras leading up to anywhere around the campus, right? That would show him
the dorms, outside the dorms
or anywhere. Like they didn't mention anything about security footage or anything.
Yeah.
So that was a little concerning too. I was like, you don't have any evidence as far as like timelines or anything as far, you know, where he was, what he was doing. Did he just leave and go straight from the apartment back, like headed back to his dorm? Did he stop somewhere? Did he, we don't know. We don't know.
I think that he got into a car, whether intentionally, like knew somebody, like people said, oh, he left the party abruptly and didn't say goodbye. Maybe he was going out to, you know.
He could have gotten a phone call. Like he could have gotten a phone call.
You know, did they? Yeah, I mean, there's something, or he could have been planning to meet this person at whatever time it was, you know.
And that's why he left abruptly and didn't say anything to anyone.
Because and if he had this whole secret world of these chats that he was doing, mm-hmm. he wouldn't tell anybody that he was leaving to go meet up with somebody.
Well, and the thing is too, so he's at a religious college, and we don't know, like, you know, what mm-hmm. his beliefs culture are. And, we know that he's religious, and we know that he was affiliated with the Republican Party. So, and
he was very into politics and the mock trial, moot court stuff.
So he could have been very conservative and fearful of his information getting out. He's at a religious school. He's in the Republican Party. Maybe he didn't want.
He has political aspirations. Right. He doesn't want to come out as maybe, you know, he had these the sexual identity stuff that he was, maybe he was working through it. Maybe he just wanted to keep it secret. Maybe he preferred men to women, you know.
Maybe he was bisexual, but he was, we don't know.
Any number of things that he didn't want anything other than straight white cis male out there, right?
Yeah.
Any number of reasons why he wouldn't have wanted that information. And, you know,
like Katie said, she didn't notice anything. But again, you're talking about like 19-year-olds. I mean, what do you really know about a person?
Yeah.
You haven't had that life worldly experience.
Especially
able to see red flag. Not red flag. It's not a red flag. But I'm saying like
signs. But especially if your partner is exploring their sexuality in a way like they're keeping it from you, are you gonna know?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know. Really gonna know, you know?
Yeah. And you've been with potentially the same person since you were in high school or whatever.
They don't live together. I mean, mm-hmm. And obviously they didn't show anything of Nick saying that behind closed doors he did anything, but
we don't even know if they had sex. I mean,
there's so much that we don't know about the kind of person he may have been presenting himself to be, because obviously he had this as a secret. Nobody else knew that he was doing all these things. His computer, the software got installed and then it was wiped. I want to know more information about that.
Do we think that Nick did it? Do we think that his father did it out of embarrassment for what he found on the computer?
Do you think he went and looked? I mean, Dad said he didn't. But who knows? I'll tell you right now,
if my daughter had a computer and she went missing, the first thing I would do, besides turning it over to the police, would be to look on the computer.
Right.
I don't know. That's me. It's my mom thing, instincts. Maybe it's
but it's also 2023.
It's 2023. So obviously times are changing. And, you know, his dad maybe didn't even know how to work a computer because, you know, a lot of parents didn't back then.
Dad had the funnest
accent.
Minnesota accent.
Yes, I loved it.
I was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yes. I was like, oh, don't you know? Uh-huh. I loved it. Yeah. Poor guy though. Like he was searching so desperately. They said he was kayaking when the springtime came looking for his son.
What if his body just floated up next to him and then
And in some of the articles I read, he still to this day feels like the police did not do everything they could have and that there could have been way more done.
I feel like that too, especially if they're not talking about surveillance cameras. They're not talking, this random guy driving around campus. Well, okay, do some more work. You know,
and how long did they focus on Nick? They didn't get into all these details. If they put all their eggs in one basket, or most of their eggs in one basket, like looking at Nick or whatever, what did they overlook in their investigation? We don't know.
What police department was investigating this? Was it the FBI? No.
No, it was not.
Exactly. No. Small police town, small police department.
Yeah. And I'm wondering even today, obviously 2008 that was done, but what more could they find nowadays? I don't know. Maybe there is more they could have found.
I feel
now.
Like as our tech, just like with DNA, as the technology gets better and better, we can go and back and revisit old cases and test things in new and different ways and come up with all these things. That's how they discovered genetic genealogy, which we'll talk about in our next episode. But
go ahead. I don't know who needs to hear this, but especially if you have an Apple and like iCloud and everything that syncs, no matter what you do on your phone, on your computer, wherever, whatever you do, whatever picture you sent and you think you deleted, whatever conversation you had with people, it is always there. And it's, I know this,
still there.
Yes, because I did erase stuff, you know, as I erase messages. And you know, there's software that I use to pull up conversations and texts between Kaya's sperm donor, whatever you want to call him, and I use in court, well, with lawyers, that I thought were deleted, and I magically downloaded the software on my computer, hooked it up, and boom, every single
pulls
message
up everything
up.
You've deleted.
Everything.
You're like, I thought I had deleted this, but it looks like I didn't. Here you go.
Nope. I was like, great, more evidence. Great. Yeah, here we go.
Here you go.
But the thing is, like, do not send that picture. Do not do anything that you would regret or you wouldn't want anybody to see, because it will come back to you.
It will.
That's my advice.
Yeah.
It's never gone.
It's all there.
And if the cops go looking for you, they will find it nowadays. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I just, you know, if something were to ever happen to me, first of all, Keith Morrison needs to do the Dateline episode on me.
I should be taking notes. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When they go to search my computer to see what, you know, what has she been Googling?
Yeah.
Please remind them what we do.
Yes.
On this right. podcast, because the thing, and what we watch on TV, because the things I Google, like, will tell
Trina,
you.
The last thing I Googled was Josh's usernames on Yahoo. So if you see the words, whatever I was just using, Coochie
Gwen,
Coo.
Gwen Big Tits.
Yes. If you see those big jugs on my search history, I was doing research, people. But yeah, no, that is true. And then, like, I have so much ADD that I'm constantly searching random things, whether it be mm-hmm. a movie or a TV show. I'm like, God help whoever looks at my search history, because
I know, right?
It's all over the place.
It is all over the place. They wouldn't tell you anything about me or why I might have gone missing or whatever.
Yeah. So,
Federal Life Nate Nyan, actually, he's like, what would happen? Because I've made the same comment to him about if I were to ever get, you know, go missing, then Keith Morrison needs to be my Dateline host. He's like, how are you going to get a Dateline? I'm like, well, you know, podcast host gets canceled.
There you go.
You know, and we wrote the whole thing about who the suspects would be.
Did you ever see the season of Dexter, the latest season?
Mm-mm.
The last season, I should say.
I haven't seen any Dexter.
Oh, well,
I know. What? I've heard it's good.
How have you not seen Dexter?
I don't watch Dexter.
No, because it's just like crime. And anyways,
I know.
I won't ruin anything for anyone, but there is in the third or the not the third, but the last season. A crime podcaster that goes investigating, and well, you can imagine what happens, but it kind of keeps me on my toes. I'm just like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's what, like, Hetero Life Mate and I wrote the whole thing about, like, who the suspects were. I'm not going to get into it because, you know,
don't put them on blast on the podcast.
It's not that I don't want to put them on blast, but, you know, I don't want to give their names any attention at this point.
That's true. Right. I'm sensing a whole what is that guy? The Joe and Carol Baskins.
Oh God, Tiger King.
Kind of. It's a podcast, Tiger King, social media. But
no, it was like the podcast canceled or podcast, you know, something. And then had a life mate with his, you know, radio and TV voice.
Yeah. God.
Oh God, I love me some Keith Morrison. He introduced like Sunday Night Football one night, and it was the most phenomenal thing I think I've ever seen in my entire life. I was like, oh my God, it's no. the football game. It was like Bills football and Keith Morrison.
Does he do cameos? Maybe I could get you one.
Oh my God. God. You know, fun fact about Keith Morrison, you know who his stepson is?
Who?
Chandler Bing.
Who's that?
Matthew Perry.
I don't watch Friends.
From Friends.
I hate Friends. I hate that show.
Do you hate like hate puppies and America happiness and sunshine too? Like, do you hate fun?
Friends is not fun. Friends is like hell. I mean,
well, watching it now, it's really bad. Like, but anyway.
Yeah. I could never get into it. That's the one show I could never get into. Didn't understand it, but yeah. Mm. But you haven't tried though. Give it two episodes. So basically the season starts great.
Because I have so much time to add more TV into my life.
Do it. It'll be worth it. It gets good, and then it gets really bad, really bad, really bad, and then it comes back up again. Bad, good, bad, good.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot of commitment.
I know.
I got a lot of I got a lot of series like that people keep telling me, oh, you have to watch this. And I'm like,
I think it was like
watch good. Locked MSNBC Lockup for the 1600th time.
Oh yeah. But yeah, if anybody knows anybody listening from Minnesota, is there anything else you want to add? Like, please message us, post.
So the unsolved mystery in this case is what happened to him. Nobody's ever found him. His body has never turned up. there's no, I mean, they didn't talk about anything that would have been evidence of him starting over, like still being alive, starting over. They didn't really go down road.
Gone.
He's vanished. Just disappeared, vanished. So, if you know anything, again, when does this happen? November.
Yeah, 2002.
Katrina didn't know the year that it was done. One star.
We have so much information in our heads at any given day. Moment.
I'm sorry.
We both have so much information in our heads at any given moment. Mm-hmm. We're so busy that, you know, little details here and there
sometimes
slip up.
Yeah. So if you have any tips for them, you go to unsolved.com and they have tip line there. We'll post all the pictures and everything with when the episode posts. And if you know anything, send it in.
Yes. Have a good night, everyone. Have a good day. Good night.
Hey, fraudcasters. You know, I used to find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting. They were the first thing to take off when I got home. But Skims has changed all that. You guys know I love my Skims Fits Everybody t-shirt bras. I own them in just about every shade now. I wear them every single day when I leave the house. And they are completely worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give. But what I was not expecting from them was how comfortable they are. Even the underwire bras that I wear all day, I barely even notice. Definitely not the first thing I take off when I come home anymore. Y'all, I'm a 36 double D and I've had a reduction and I've gone up and down and lost weight and gained weight and all the things. And the Fits Everybody t-shirt bra, I swear, fits me the best. I finally found a t-shirt bra that I can wear. But not only that, it is the best bra that I own. It holds the girls in so well. And let me just say, Hetero Life Mate really appreciates these bras too. Shop Skims bras at skims.com. Now available in 62 sizes from a 30A to a 46H. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $75. And if you haven't yet, please be sure to let them know that we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show, The Fraudcast, in the drop-down menu that follows.